Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Morning, everybody. Thank you. So glad to be back here on the Sunday morning wake-up call. Thanks to Sean McCord for all his hard work the last few weeks. Sean, have a great summer. He's off to school. So you'll have to stick with me and Sean while Sean does his thing, and Dan Gould will cover for me while I take a little break in a few weeks. But today, in action, Lisa Provence here, news editor at the Seville Weekly. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Rick.
It's nice to have you back in action here.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Well, you know, some people are busy in their lives writing current news.
There's been a lot of current news to keep up with. It's exhausting.
Well, it's nice that you take a moment to come in here and catch us up on it isn't really the word, because isn't the phrase, because but it takes a moment to sort of sit down and catch our breath and put it all back in a nice, wrap it all up and chat about it for a moment and get it all back together, because just trying to stream it all as it goes along, sometimes you forget a piece or it becomes difficult. I don't know how you do it at Seville Weekly, just trying to write one and grab the next one before it gets by you, and then reach for another before it's just flying all the time. How do you grab one and not miss it?
I think we miss a lot. It's just overwhelming. And so, you know, we do the best we can with our staff of two people. But, you know, I think all of the media must be exhausted with so much going on.
You know, the folks from Homegrown making the comments as they were leaving about Lee Park now, whether it's officially Emancipation Park or not, and all the events happening, which we will be talking about throughout the hour here with Lisa Provence. But is it especially newsy here in Charlottesville over the last couple months because of what's going on with at the park and sort of the tendrils going on from that?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think sometimes what we have going on here, I mean, that's enough to keep a handle on. I think what if you're like national media, or what if you're covering the White House? That would be another one that I think, gosh, those people, they may not even be able to sleep because there's something happening all the time. But here, yeah, since in the past year, more than a year, when the proposal first was made to get rid of the statues at Lee Park and Jackson Park, we've just seen so much activity. But yes, this year even more so. It's just interesting that something like that, based on how even now we deal with race and the ramifications of slavery, and that they still are having such a huge impact on us today, 150 or more years later.
I'm sitting here talking with Lisa Provence. She's the news editor at the Seville Weekly. We've got, I have two major topics to go through today. I'm going to talk about the recent primary results. A series of articles that were written upcoming to the Tuesday elections, and then an article that you wrote, Progressive Setbacks. I want to talk about that. And then the majority of the hour, talk about, and it's just going to take me a while, so I'm sure I'll say Lee Park multiple times throughout the hour. And I think for listeners, that's just how it's going to take us a while to rephrase it to Emancipation Park. and all the downtown mall issues and protests and things. And I'm not, when I'm not looking at you, Lisa, for those of us who can't see, and I'm looking at my phone, just before we came in, we were talking about, did something happen last night with, what's the name of the
group? Jason Kessler and the Proud Boys.
And the Proud Boys. And yes, at about midnight last night, I saw posting on Facebook, you're welcome to call in if you know what it is, 284-9470. That's 284-9470. I say this with Dan behind me. We didn't even check the phones, really. But I did see it, and now I'm going through Facebook trying to find it again. So I didn't want Lisa to think, I'm checking all my Happy Father's Day posts. By the way, Happy Father's Day, everybody, to my father.
Happy Father's Day, yes, even to those who aren't with us anymore.
That's right. And I hope everyone takes time to wish Happy Father's Day to your father or whoever played that role in your life. But let's start, because the primary results, you had an article that you wrote about progressive setback with a question mark, because of those who lost. So the winners being Amy Laufer, Heather Hill won, and this is the Charlottesville City Council primary race in the
Democratic primary, which is pretty much all that really counts here,
right,
in Charlottesville.
Here in the city of Charlottesville. Bob Fenwick lost. So, do you believe that was Bob Fenwick's punishment for voting for the statue to be sold, or possibly for his punishment for being indecisive the first time around?
You know, Rick, as much as I like to follow politics, my prognostication on it is I'm quite often way off. But okay, here what I know, Bob is it could be. I think, on the other hand, he maybe had been hoping for a groundswell of support for his vote on the statue. And other people have said maybe it was just simply he was outspent and outworked. Certainly Amy Laufer and Heather Hill had a lot more money. Heather Hill was out knocking on doors all over the place. So that could have been a factor. And Bob, you know, has always been, he seemed kind of like the odd man out on city council. And I, you know, have enjoyed covering Bob. I mean, he's, you know, interesting character, but he just seems like he hasn't quite fit in with the standard Democrats that we're used to on city council.
And, character.
You know,
a good word for that, right?
Well, the first couple of times, I think two times he ran as an independent and then realized if you want anything to work, you know, if you want to get on council, you pretty much need to have the Democrats behind you. But there had been some feeling for a while that he was going to be the one targeted to be replaced in some way, maybe like Dee Dee Smith was 2 years ago. So that, for, you know, in that scenario, that is what happened. So we'll have to see now what happens next with all of this energy that we've seen this year in all sorts of forms. And there was so much enthusiasm and, you know, with candidates coming out that, you know, it was just interesting to see whether that was going to play out in the polls. And it didn't quite, but still, that was just a primary. So
did that make him the progressive of the three of them, because he came an election ago from the independent side? Or just because the Ms. Laufer and Ms. Hill were backed by, had more money, and that meant that they were more from the traditional Democrat support?
Yeah, I think the term progressive might be used a little loosely with Bob Fenwick. Certainly, Amy Laufer and Heather Hill seem to have the blessing of the Democratic machine. And Bob, though, was endorsed by EPIC, that's Equity and Progress in Charlottesville, the new group that came and wanted to be, it aims to be more progressive and right. is trying to recruit candidates. So they had endorsed Bob, and sometimes I think, you know, people are fans of Bob's just because he can have a contrarian perspective that, you know, that is at odds with the
right,
majority.
He's not the caucus vote guy.
Right. Right. So, but they had endorsed Bob, but then Dave Norris, who is one of the founders of EPIC, said they had high hopes for Nakia Walker in November. And I don't know, they maybe, I don't know how that would have played out had Bob gotten the nomination, and then Nakia, if they're going to endorse her, which I feel like they will. And I think the other thing...
I believe they already have.
Ah, okay.
I mean, since your article came out anyway, quotes from Dave Norris make it sound like the way I read them was that he already has.
Yeah. Okay. That is very likely. And so that seems like who they will be pushing in the fall. And, you know, the other thing I think we know from Charlottesville politics is if you're an independent or a Republican and you're making a serious play for it, you're going to hope for your supporters single shot you into and only vote for one candidate because of the way it works here. If you vote for two, you're only helping the Democrats get their candidates on council.
You also had other discussion in that article about progressive setback was about the Commonwealth attorney.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jeff Fogel, you know, I really like Jeff. He's a total firebrand. But, you know, again, Joe Platania is well-liked. He's worked in the Commonwealth's attorney's office for a while now. And again, he had the backing of the Democratic machine, as far as I could tell, but also every attorney in town. I mean, that was such an impressive turnout when he announced. And you can, I think, tell a lot about how a candidate's going to do by who stands up for them when they make their announcement. And just about every lawyer in town was there, including Buddy Weber, who used to be chair of the Republican Party So I don't know. I think a lot of people had high hopes for Jeff Fogel, but I don't think it was all that surprising that Joe Platania won.
Do you think that, again, to cross over a little bit into our discussion for the hour, again, Lisa Province here. She's the news editor at Seville Weekly here on today's Sunday morning wake-up call. Happy Father's Day to everyone, 13 minutes after the hour. Do you think that the events happened on the downtown mall with Jeff Fogel and some with Mr. Kessler and Mr. Kessler's friends, do you think that played a role in his loss, or do you think it was that he wasn't going to win anyway, and it was strictly about the what he might do in how he the topics that he brought up and how it might affect Mr. Platania going forward?
Yeah, that's hard to say. I mean, certainly it's a little bit awkward if you're running for the city's top prosecutor job and you're arrested and right. you're going to be having to go through the court system there
the day before the vote.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that had a huge influence. I think Jeff's role was certainly to bring up the issue of the topic of racial inequity in the criminal justice system. And that's a really crucial topic. And again, so much of what's going on, it's going to go back to race. I think that's what we're going to be seeing in the coming year. And so he raised that issue, and he has said, I believe someone said, that by raising it, he caused Joe Platania to have to address these issues too. And I think Joe would have anyway, but you know, having Jeff there to talk about these things like the failure of the war on drugs, mass incarceration, and, you know, those are important topics, and he raised those in this race.
David Toscano had a challenger.
That's right. Ross.
In the primary.
Oh, gosh, now I'm not sure how I know how to pronounce his name. Matiga.
I believe that's correct.
Please correct me.
Yeah.
Ross was really enthusiastic about his challenge and felt, again, he had, in the progressive world, he had young people, I mean, UVA students. It seemed like he had a lot of people out there pounding the pavement for him. And that is just something we haven't seen in quite a long time, that someone would challenge David Toscano, who, you know, is an institution now, but is the House Minority Leader, and that he would have a challenger was pretty surprising. I mean, I remember when David Toscano was the radical insurgent, you know, when he first came on the political scene. So it's interesting now to see him as the establishment figure being challenged.
Right. Suddenly he's not progressive enough.
That seemed to be Ross Matiga's message,
right.
Yeah. Or that one came back to, I think, Dominion. I think the pipeline, another big factor in that race.
And then the real surprise of the election on Tuesday.
Corey Stewart. Oh, my gosh. I don't think anyone saw that coming. And even the day before the election, we got a press release from his campaign that said he was even or ahead of Ed Gillespie. And I sort of dismissed it as, you know, campaign hyperbole. But holy smokes, he was really close.
Lisa Provence here, news editor at the Civo Weekly. How much did you receive any numbers? I know what two or three people told me, but I never know where they got their information from. The difference in voter turnout so that Corey Stewart's and Ed Gillespie's close race could be based strictly on the fact that there was such a low turnout in Republican voter primary numbers, so that Corey Stewart's votes were because of his strength in strong supporters.
Yeah, you know, I talked to Jeffrey Skelly at the Center for Politics about, and turnout was one of the other big surprises in this race. And the Democrats far exceeded Republicans. Well, no, actually, they exceeded them. But the Republicans had really, really good turnout, too. He said that this exceeded the last non-presidential primary. I believe that was 2009, that turnout for both parties was record-breaking, but especially for the Democrats. In an otherwise, low turnout events. I don't know why people don't get out to vote for primaries. They can be so much fun.
And then in the Charlottesville, Albemarle area, Tom Perriello
crushed
lost.
It here. Well, here he
crushed it. But he lost overall, so disappointing to a large percentage of people who supported the guy from our area.
Right. Okay, another surprise was that a lot of people had assumed that race would be much closer
right.
than it was. I think there was a 12-point difference in, so Ralph Northam now will become the Democratic candidate, and you know, he is seen as more the establishment figure, as are the other Democrats that won in this race.
And that's what it'll end up being in November, one of two national governor elections this year.
I think
Jersey
that's right.
and Virginia, I believe. But Virginia being one of two national elections for governor this year, what we end up with is two established candidates.
Yes.
Going against one another.
Yeah.
So where's the surprise?
Well, we'll see. I mean, Ed Gillespie certainly took some blows here with Corey Stewart coming that close. So where he was just assumed to be a shoe-in, especially after he came surprisingly close to Senator Mark Warner 2 years ago in Gillespie's Senate run. So still, I have no idea how that'll play out, but, you know, elections again, always interesting.
What do you, when you do these types of articles, you mentioned the Corey Stewart press release and you tossed it aside as hyperbole. How do you gather your information and go through it as news versus versus not news?
Well, on the whole, I will tell you, we get so much information from campaigns that most of it I just disregard. And like sometimes it seems like every 5 minutes. So, and I just would say, note to campaign press directors, it's too much. We can't. So that's actually not unusual that I would disregard it, but I did note it. And was like, whoa, that just seems to defy everything that I had heard from conventional wisdom. And I don't remember if I saw polls in those races. But yeah, that one was just, we just didn't expect that.
Lisa Provence here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Ms. Provence, the news editor at the Siva Weekly. Let's take a break, give her a chance to catch her breath. Be right back. And Sunday Morning Wake Up Call back in action. Thanks for a beautiful Sunday on a lovely Father's Day. Make sure to catch up with the person in your life who fills that role. And Lisa Provence here. Share the news with everybody as we go back in time. A little history is always part of the news because that's where we get where we are now. Isn't that right, Lisa?
As I understand it, we are writing the rough draft of history right now.
when you write an article, and we'll get into, you made mention, hopefully you'll share a tidbit. I'll expect you to tell me next week's article, but when you write an article, how much history do you have to read to write next week's article?
I always kind of brush up on things, but that's sort of one of the advantages for having been around a long time, is that I'm more aware of the history. So the institutional knowledge that comes with news. I mean, because I've been reporting about 20 years here in town, and so I think that helps.
All the way back to the Hook.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Before that, Seville Weekly. I started
Original Seville Weekly 1.0,
yes.
Off to the Hook.
Before, yes.
Back to Seville Weekly.
Published my first freelance article.
Spencer. He's a good gambler. He knows good stuff.
He's a terrific reporter. If only he could hold on to his newspapers. That would.
Oh,
Hawes.
All right. So let's talk about the park, the urban park, Lee Park. Have they officially changed the name yet? Have they? I know they talked about changing it to Emancipation Park. Have they made that official bureaucratic decision and put it in writing and yes. done all the work to make it Emancipation Park?
Yeah, that was that, I think, 2 weeks ago at City Council? Although my proofreader asked this question because I had it in a story, and I was going Jackson Park, now known as Justice Park. And the one thing I have not checked in on myself is to go, was that official immediately? Or, you know, sometimes laws or changes, this takes effect July 1 or whatever
date. Make it a memo. But, right, the state of Virginia, a lot of things don't happen until July 1st.
From the General Assembly. And so I know City Council voted on it. And as far as I can tell, it was effective immediately. But I'm not 100% sure about that.
So you'll hear me refer to both and throughout the hour. So this goes back to, as you said, a year ago when they first started talking about what to do with the statue. There were comments and complaints about the Robert E. Lee statue because of what happened in South Carolina, correct? There was the shooting down in South Carolina at the church.
Yeah, Dylan Roof. Yeah, that horrible. That did make people. I think prompt people again to go, let's get rid of
the Confederate flag must come down over top of South Carolina's governor over top of their government buildings. Other places must get rid of their Confederate statues and change the names of their parks and sort of thing. And Charlottesville said, we're going to get in on that.
Charlottesville did. And that was, I'm pretty sure it was last March when Wes Bellamy and Kristen Zekos made their push to remove the statues. And there were some other people ahead of us, though. I think New Orleans was ahead. And then I've learned Lexington, Virginia, has had its own issues with the Confederate flag there. When they their council voted to remove the flag from public streets, and then that's been an issue for them, too. So it was around more, but, yeah, I think South Carolina probably was a turning point for a lot of people.
So they have didn't Charlottesville have a blue ribbon commission of some sort to talk about what they were, how they were going to handle the statues?
Yes, they've, there was discussion for a year before this vote was made earlier this spring to remove the statues, so almost a year.
The Blue Ribbon Commission comes back to the council and says, here's our suggestion.
Yes, and their suggestions were to remove the statues into our Lee. Nobody really has as much a problem with the Stonewall Jackson statue. But they had recommended removing it, or if not, to reconstitute it.
They're going to make it more of a historical figure. Right, contextualize it.
Yes,
right.
That's the word. And so that was the recommendation. And then, you know, we had this drama over the winter when City Council voted. And it was 2-2 split on removing it, with Bob Fenwick abstaining, and then coming back a few weeks later, and he had changed his mind.
Right. Maybe I'm ready to vote.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Bob was, I think, trying to leverage his vote into getting a few concessions for some things he wanted. And his vote changed everything, and then it was like heading toward General Lee's departure full steam ahead. And then, of course, there was a lawsuit.
So my notes show that on February 11th, Corey Stewart, running for the Republican
governor,
governor in the in the recent primary, comes to town and makes a visit to Lee Park.
Corey Stewart wrapped himself around the Confederate statue issue, monument issue, and yes, he came here, and you've probably seen footage of that where it was there was quite a confrontational meeting in Lee Park between him and activists who did not support Corey Stewart or the statue.
Again, our guest today, it's 30 minutes after the hour, Lisa Provence. She's the news editor at the Siva Weekly. We're talking about Lee Park, Emancipation Park, and some of the issues and protests, getting started on sort of when things were getting fired up now that city council has made their decision. But even the decision was a battle because they decide what they're going to do. I believe it's 3-2 that they're going to sell the statue, correct?
That was the decision, yes. But at the same time, they knew that they were likely going to get sued on this and that that it would not be happening immediately.
And it,
if
and
at all.
And it's not because they were sued and it's now, is it a 6-month?
There was a 6-month injunction issued by a local judge. So, yeah, the statue is not going anywhere right now. Okay. But meanwhile, Lee Park, or Emancipation Park, it continues to be the scene of a lot of activity this year.
So Corey Stewart, as you say, wraps himself in this issue. Does he draw both sides to him on his visit?
I think some would consider him a fairly divisive candidate. What I remember about Corey Stewart is involvement with in Prince William County, which a few, I hesitate to say whether it was a decade ago or what, but they really cracked down on immigrants, illegal immigrants in that town, in that county. And so that was where Corey Stewart comes from. And he is considered, he does attract people who feel strongly about the symbolism of these statues and why they should go. What I saw when he was here that I hadn't seen before was the use of a bullhorn in his face and other people's faces with some of these protesters who belong to showing up for racial justice or surge. And they were in his face. And it was a protest. I don't recall seeing anything like that in Charlottesville at that time. And now we've continued to see more confrontational demonstrations at that park and other places.
Were you at the park that day, or was somebody else from Siva Weekly there?
A photographer, Eze Amos, was there, and he took some great photos. No, I was not there, but I have watched video of it, because that's the thing now. Everybody's filming everything that happens, and I believe Rob Schilling was filming a lot of it, but there was footage of it, and I really hadn't even paid that much attention to the fact that, you know, Corey Stewart was going to be here. So, but other people did.
I'm always curious as to at what point someone starts to feel unsafe at something like that. Because, you know, in Charlottesville, I think for the most part, one of the reasons people choose to live here is a feeling of safety and comfort in being wherever you choose to be. Maybe not at all places, at all 24 hours of the day, but certainly I would think at Lee Park on a Saturday at 3 in the afternoon. But as crowds gather and there's a divisiveness in the air, I'm curious to ask someone who was there at what point, whether that was yelling or whether it was just you could feel the emotion in the air. And as we've gone from February to Father's Day today, certainly a lot of divisive occurrences have taken place. And
yeah,
of them have been brought upon by, I mean, it's not just happening with people gathering. Some people are going up to someone else and forcing it to happen.
Yes, well, we have seen the footage, I feel like you probably have seen, of two different times on the downtown mall with Jason Kessler sitting there and people sort of surrounding an eating area, shouting racist go home or Nazi go home or other things. That and this volume, I think, especially when on the downtown mall where, you know, someone is like trying to have dinner. And so that's something we haven't seen before. And also with this escalation, we're seeing arrests. I mean, they're back from the Corey Stewart visit where someone, Jason Kessler says someone grabbed his phone and right. then it was retrieved by Joe Drago. And Joe ends up in the mix of other issues like city council's new procedure. He was dragged out of city council, sued, and had a judge agreed with him that city council's speaking public comment procedures, part of them, were unconstitutional. Anyway, back to these confrontations, when you start having phones grabbed or knocked away or we're seeing these charges start, and that was followed by the Mother's Day march. There weren't any arrests when Richard Spencer came to town and had his tiki torch brigade march in Lee Park, but the next night at the vigil,
the Unity March, the one with the candles.
Yes, at that one, things got heated again, and there were, I think, three arrests from that. Disorderly conduct, somebody threw a cell phone at a cop. So we are seeing these cases add up, and I guess it's not that big a surprise. I mean, Commonwealth Attorney Dave Chapman's like, well, if you're in somebody's face screaming, it's setting the stage for someone to push you back or to, you know, things that happen that become then chargeable offenses.
Lisa Provence here. She's the news editor at the Siva Weekly. We're talking about Lee Park, Emancipation Park, the events going on there with the protests, statue, the renaming of the park, the events that have been going on for the last year. We'll be right back. And here we are back on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Thanks for listening. It's a beautiful Sunday out there. Hope you're enjoying it. Make sure to give your father a call or the person who played that role in your life. Give them a thank you if you can. Back here talking with Lisa Provence. Lisa, thank you for taking time to be here on a beautiful Sunday. I'm sure you could be doing all kinds of things.
Thanks, Rick. Got me in town. That's something I normally don't do on weekends, so I guess that's good.
Well, you got to sleep in a little bit.
I did.
You know, if it was the 8 a.m. Sunday morning wake-up call, we probably wouldn't.
I'm pretty sure I would have been busy.
Yeah. We sort of skipped over the Richard Spencer's white nationalist march, the Tiki Torch procession, that got national attention because all the video of that, you don't see that they are tiki torches. I mean, the filming of that from the cell phones at a distance, that's a blurry look. And the focus is on the torches. That's very much of a Ku Klux Klan video appearance.
That's what it sure looked like to a lot of people, yeah.
Was there forewarning? Did you get the press release that was going to take place?
No. That was really quietly done. And I'm also seeing that now people are having, when they're having their demonstrations, I didn't know anything about it. And that doesn't mean but I think it was a surprise for a lot of people. As I understand it, even the only person who captured any images of it was Allison Rabel at the Daily Progress. And my understanding is she just happened to be going by Lee Park on a Saturday night and sees this. You know, just, you know, nobody knew about that. And then the follow-up Unity event the next night also was not publicized beyond social media, and I think people were told to keep that quiet, and it was not announced to the press as far as I know.
It's very much, and I'm not making fun of this, please understand, listeners, it's very much sort of a flash mob thing where you one person tells the next person who tells the next person, and you're told, you know, you whisper it and say, don't tell anybody else except these two people, but be here at this time and bring this with you. And then you gather, and the one or two people who are leading say, okay, now this is what we're going to do. And when I say go, or this is the sign for starting, and that's it. And then it all happens, and everybody in the nearby area is completely caught off guard.
That's how it seemed that weekend. What was interesting about, and when we were talking earlier about last night and the Proud Boys being in town, is that was posted. That was a little surprising because Jason Kessler didn't make any effort to hide it or keep it under. I mean, he didn't announce a location, but I think everybody in town knew that the Proud Boys were supposed to be here last night. So
talk about that for a minute, because I didn't think you and I chatted a bit beforehand, and then I spent all this time trying to find that Facebook thing that I never did find. So share that with listeners.
Well, I don't even know what to share.
Well, you mentioned that it was posted about the face, but not everybody knows it's about the Proud Boys, et cetera.
Right. Well, I didn't either until this year, where I've had to learn a whole new terminology and lingo from, particularly about the alt-right, but I would say about the far left as well. So the Proud Boys, from what I can tell, it's like this uber masculine. Wait, it's masculinist, I think that's, or again, excuse my pronunciation, but these are very masculine and as well as right wing. But the Proud Boys, I believe, are associated with some of the people who are ready for a rumble, if, you know, in confrontations with the far left, which they call Antifa, which is short for anti-fascist. And we saw those confrontations in Berkeley back earlier in the year, where it was a riot. And that was from was that Milo Yiannopoulos, the Breitbart guy, was coming to Berkeley, and riots ensued. So that's my understanding. And I think I'm not even going to pretend I'm up on this. I have just the most cursory acquaintance with some of these groups, and there are others. There are people online who are tracking them in Virginia, and there, I think we'll see more of the main. Well, wait, I don't know if mainstream's the word. It probably isn't, but we're going to see more of now what's considered the not even establishment, but white rights groups. Whereas with people who are unlike, okay, on the other end of that is the KKK. And those are like the dregs of white nationalism, even by people who consider themselves white nationalists. The Klan is way down there.
It's I don't even know what phrase to use, but it's like a pinhead of this section of society even has its own far edges, you know, far right and far left that you can put them on. And I don't mean far right wing and far left wing. I mean far stream of, oh, you're too, you know, soft for me, or you're too old for me. Even though they're just this little pinhead of society, they still have their own, you know, you're too babyish, or you're too, you know, you do too much, or it's like, that's crazy.
It's a segment of society that has emerged since the election of Donald Trump as president. And so I did a brief glossary, just because I was hearing so many terms that I had never heard before. And you're seeing people like, well, I knew about Alex Jones at InfoWars, and I think he's always been widely perceived as a nut job. But now he's like getting press credentials, or attempting to get press credentials. And, you know, so people like that I was aware of him, but now it's like he is trying. I don't know. It's interesting seeing him trying to be as a credible news site or organization.
11:48, talking with Lisa Provence, who's scaring me with the way current scary people are actually filtering their way into modern conversation. Because if you publish a glossary of that in the CIVA Weekly, scary people are going to start high-fiving themselves about how they made modern press. So you can't inform the rest of us about, oh, if we're going to write about it and talk about it, you need to know what these terms are and who these people are. And then everybody else is, and then these people will go, yeah, see, we made the CIVA Weekly. Now, how long before we make the Washington Post? But back to the conversation, we were talking about how the Proud Boys, they were telling people that they were coming to Charlottesville.
Yeah, that was unusual. And again, we have not heard of anything occurred last night. So maybe
I saw a Facebook post. Take that for what it is. It is not Washington Post news that someone who worked at a downtown mall restaurant put up a Facebook post that someone at her restaurant called her that she needed to come back and help because the Proud Boys were there. And so she had a very long Facebook post about what happened. She went back and helped, called the police. Police got them away. She locked the door and the restaurant closed to make 260 words into 15. But it was, so supposedly the Proud Boys were in town on the downtown mall at a restaurant.
Yeah, I don't know. You have more information on that than
well,
I
that's
do.
That's from a midnight 12:30 a.m. Facebook post. But so it seems as though Charlottesville is becoming all because of Emancipation Park and the Robert E. Lee statue, we have become somewhat of a place for events to take place.
Yeah, we're like this magnet now for for people who feel strongly about this issue on both sides. So this week, I went to the community meeting that was called, I believe, West Bellamy maybe organized that. It was at Mount Zion, First African Church, and it was packed. That was just a really interesting event to hear how people wanted to respond to the upcoming visit of the KKK, the Loyal White Knights, out of Pelham, North Carolina, July 8th. And so it was very thoughtful, I thought, in many ways.
Thoughtful?
I think so. Some of the responses to me were a lot of people are advocating for, let's just ignore them. Let's have our own positive events.
Who was at the meeting?
There was a swath of the community.
Okay.
But there were many city officials, such as, besides Wes Bellamy and Kristen Zekos, Police Chief Al Thomas was there, City Manager Maurice Jones, and Mayor Mike Signer, as well as other people in the community that I maybe don't know that well. But just and so the comments were really interesting. I think it came back to don't take the bait. Don't give them, and this could be somewhat of a ragtag group. I did talk to a Grand Dragon this week, and so it's interesting to me how much attention this group is getting when it could be, when they actually get here, it could be underwhelming. I don't know. I could be wrong, but.
So you talked to a Grand Dragon from the North Carolina group.
I did, yeah. And it was pretty interesting, for one, because I think I may have actually been talking to the Imperial Wizard, who was using a fake name. That's one theory or possibility in this, and I've learned in doing some research on it that he has used this name before, Robert Jones, who was a former Grand Dragon of North Carolina. So for those who aren't up on their Klan hierarchy, let's see, the state leader is the Grand Dragon. The Imperial Wizard is the one that's head of the entire organization. So this group ran into a little trouble back in December when they were going to have a Donald Trump victory parade through Roxborough, North Carolina. And two of their leaders ended up in jail, and a third was in the hospital stabbed. So this was just getting...
That's a little trouble.
That was a little trouble. And so even before coming to up here, the Imperial Wizard is a guy named Christopher Barker, and he's facing attempted murder charges, basically, in North Carolina. He's going to be in court June 26th. And right now, his bond says that he is not allowed to leave two counties in North Carolina. He's supposed to stay there. So whether he'll actually be able to make it up here, that is one question.
So you're talking to them, and articles coming up soon?
I will, yes. I'll have my interview with the Grand Dragon will be coming out Wednesday in this week's Seville.
Can you share anything? I mean, can you tell me why they would be coming up here?
Yes. I mean,
why, because that goes back to the previous point of why Charlottesville?
Yeah, it's back to the statues. It's back to how we're dealing with our history of race in this country, even here in the 21st century.
Goodness gracious. Lisa Provence here. She is the news editor at the SIVA Weekly. If you don't pick up the SIVA Weekly every week, you can certainly go online at c-ville.com. And you certainly want to get next week's issue to read that article. A couple minutes left. Lisa, we talked about how you get the articles and everything, where you get your news from and how you keep up. How do you, you know, what gets trashed with all the news that's coming through, all this information, especially as we've been talking about the Lee Park and the downtown mall, et cetera, as you're writing these pieces, how do you determine what gets edited out?
It's pretty much what would I like to read. I mean, you know, it's like that's kind of my always my gut thing. And I will just say, thank goodness we have Charlottesville tomorrow to cover all of the city and county meetings. That's so important. And we have TV stations that, you know, can do more of the 24/7 news that we simply can't do. So I've just had to sort of go, I can't cover everything. We can't cover everything. So what seems the most compelling? Well, okay, again, to me. But to my reader, it seems to work out that quite often that's what our readers are interested in as well.
And are there big stories lined up for the future? I mean, you've got this article coming out next week, but what's lined up?
Oh, my gosh. Well, after that, we have the power issue, and then later this summer, Best of SIVA.
Because people need to go out and vote, right?
I think so. I'm sorry, I'm not up on the details on that. Oh, well. I know. My associates would go, don't you know?
Yeah. Well, I get the feed in my Facebook page.
Ah,
remember to vote, c-ville.com. All right, Lisa, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
No, thanks for getting here. I'm glad we aren't on too early.
Me too.
Lisa Provence, news editor at the SIVA Weekly. And I'll be gone the next couple of weeks. Dan Gould, however, will be here discussing gerrymandering next week. And when I come back, got some things lined up. UVA professor of politics will be doing Trump administration's foreign policy. I'll have the area assistant Commonwealth attorney talking about child sex abuse and trafficking. And then Albemarle County Superintendent Dr. Pam Moran will be on a couple weeks after that. Everybody have a lovely day. Thank you so much. Take care.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.